Welcome to the NHL Numbers Podcast with Brent, Chase, Corey, Jared, and Matt.
I wish you guys would watch the thing and report on the game. You don't look at the score and say, oh, 7-0, you just absolutely got smoked.
Welcome to the conference final special edition of the NHL Numbers Podcast. If you are expecting a podcast from us every few days, you are going to be sorely mistaken here in about 3 days. But because it's the conference finals, we thought we'd do a special in-depth edition looking at each series. So we got a couple guests on. We got Nisi from Jules from the Crown, a Kings blog. She'll be talking to us about the Kings Phoenix series. And also, we've got George Ayes from Blue Shirt Banter, and he'll soon be part of NHL Numbers to give us the Rangers side in their series against the Devils. So now we are happy to be joined by Denise, better known as Nisi, from the excellent Los Angeles Kings blog, Jules from the Crown. Welcome, Denise.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So let's go ahead and start with the biggest story for the Kings this season was obviously the trade deadline move. Sending Jack Johnson and a first-round pick to Columbus in return for Jeff Carter. Obviously, we were all, you know, kind of blown away by that move from the Kings' side. What were your thoughts at the time, and what do you think the overall views were of the media and Kings fans?
Well, I was really happy with the move. I was hoping they would move Johnson and keep Voinov and Martinez. I think they were actually trying Voinov out during his games in the regular season. He was actually getting a lot of tough, even strength assignments over Johnson. So I was really, really happy when it happened. I really wanted to trade Johnson, and I really, really wanted a forward. So that all worked out really well for me. I was very happy. I think reactions were pretty positive from the Kings side. I think people recognized that they needed another score pretty badly. There's obviously some mixed feelings about Johnson. half of the people seem to love him, and then the other half seem to hate him. So, well, maybe hate's too strong a word. no, it's not. let's just say that there's some really passionate feelings on both sides. So I'm pretty sure the poll on the Insider was overwhelmingly positive for the move. It was just recognized that the Kings needed more scoring. So moving defensive depth for that made sense.
And then the other big move was bringing Sutter in as the coach. What were your thoughts there?
At the time, I wasn't really sure that that was going to actually have a very positive impact on the offensive side. There was a lot of defiance, I think, from Lombardi when he fired Terry Murray. He went after the players. He said it was all their fault that Terry Murray got fired, and was sort of adamant that it wasn't the system, and so I really wasn't sure what to expect from Daryl Sutter, but he really brought not just a more aggressive attitude and a more emotional engagement, which I think a lot of writers have discussed, but just more pursuit of the puck, like less falling back, more going after it and getting it, and it had an impact right away. Although even under Stevens in that interregnum period when Sutter hadn't arrived yet, the Kings were doing better shot wise. But overall, you can really see it take effect the second Terry Murray is fired, and it all came together right around the trade deadline. Really took off.
Yeah, it kind of seems like maybe a quarter of the way through the season or so, there was the Sutter change, and then maybe another quarter of the season in, there was the trade deadline move. So those were both big jumps.
They were, yeah, very big jumps. Actually, when he first arrived, they did start to just pile up points. They were getting OT points, or even if they weren't winning, and they didn't really hit a rough patch until February. They spent practically the whole month on the road because the Grammys come to Staples Center, and it was sort of a lull. And he challenged Brown and Kopitar to be better, and the trade deadline happened. Everything just clicked from there.
So here's a clip from David Beckham talking in Montreal yesterday.
How do you feel coming into a hockey town like Montreal and getting us converted to soccer? Is everybody here loves their hockey?
I think we're the hockey town at the moment.
You got a point there.
Sorry, I don't want to offend anyone, but... You know, yeah, it's great. Obviously, it's exciting in LA at the moment with the Kings. You know, they're playing so well and doing so well, and it's exciting. But obviously, I know Montreal's a big hockey town as well. So, but I don't want to say too much more.
Okay, so that's David Beckham. He's a star player for the LA Galaxy. Do you get the feeling there's a lot more excitement for the Kings than there has been maybe since the Gretzky era?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think a lot of people don't realize, even though there are a lot of sports teams and a ton of things to do in LA, the Kings have always had this sort of hardcore fan base that never left them, would still fill the stands even though the team wasn't having success on the ice. So those people have always been there. But in LA, if you win, you get attention. David Beckham actually, he's met some of the Kings players, and he's come to some of the games with his sons and had a blast, so I like him. He's a cheeky monkey.
Excellent. Are you surprised by the results so far? Obviously, both series went extremely well for the Kings. Did that surprise you, even though you're higher on them probably than a lot of people were?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I just going into the stretch, I thought they were really underrated and people were just looking too much at their regular season record and not really recognizing that a lot of changes had happened. So I was really high on them. I thought they had a really good chance to knock off Vancouver. The Blues worried me, but I really didn't expect it to be over so quickly. It just goes to show you that playoff hockey is hard to predict. But it wouldn't have surprised me if either of those series had gone longer. I think they were a lot closer than it appeared at times. But yeah, I'm really, really happy about what's happening.
Certainly sounds like it. That's good.
I don't get to get giddy very often as a Kings fan my entire life. Savoring.
We all picked the Blues series to go either 6 or 7 games, and actually Brent and I picked the Blues, but I think we were all surprised by the sweep.
Yeah.
So who do you think are the big standouts so far in the playoffs for the Kings?
Oh, gosh. That is really tough because they're, you know, so many players have stepped up. But really, Kopitar's whole line, they've just been unstoppable. No one has an answer for them. You know, you try to put your best shutdown person on them. They can handle it. They can go power against power. They can eviscerate you. Kopitar's line has been amazing. I think the Kings' defense has always been sort of underrated this year, which I thought was surprising considering how well they did suppressing shots and goals against. But the bottom six has also been a really, really big X factor, just being able to send Stoll's line or Frazier's line out there at some crucial moments and not lose the shot battle and just keep pressing. It's pretty impressive.
Are there any letdowns at all that any people you think you would like to see play better?
Well, I think everyone would like Carter to play better. He's been playing with an ankle injury, and it really showed in the Vancouver series. I thought he looked better against the Blues. Richards, I thought, was also hurt in the Vancouver series, but he seemed to benefit from some rest. So I would say, yeah, Jeff Carter.
The standout unit, I would say, for the Kings is their penalty kill. So far, they've given up 3 power play goals against, and they have 4 shorthanded goals. So they're actually up when on the PK. They're at 92.1% kill percentage, and they've got the 4th lowest shots against rate. Obviously, with Quick back there, that helps a lot. Why do you think the PK has been working so well?
They actually did part of their scoring resurgence have a lot of shorthanded goals down the stretch, even in the regular season. So I guess I shouldn't have been terribly surprised to see it continue, but I really was amazed that they were able to score so many shorthanded goals. I think they're all just very experienced penalty killers. They're used to playing together. they know where they're going to be on the ice. Brown and Kopi can just pass and just know what's going to happen. Willie Mitchell is an amazing penalty killer. He's had a huge impact. Sometimes he can kill 8 minutes of penalties a night. It's just kind of amazing. I think they've just always had that structured discipline part of their penalty killing, and that's part of the legacy of Terry Murray. When Sutter came in, he was asked if he needed to change anything to improve the penalty killing, and he just said no, it's amazing, it's great, I don't have to fix anything. So it's just been a really good source of strength for them throughout the regular season, and it's carried over.
Okay, so now let's turn to the opponents, Phoenix. This is actually a rivalry I think maybe a lot of fans around the league don't know about, but it seems pretty intense down there.
Yeah, the teams, they see each other a lot. They do not like each other. There's been some fight-filled games. I don't know if you guys saw NHL 36 where they followed Richards, Mike Richards, around. They followed him in the Phoenix game, and he took an elbow to the head from Hanzel and then started to fight him, and then Hanzel is 6'6", and just sort of grabbing onto him, being like, really? Is this fight happening? But yeah, it was a pretty fight-filled game.
Yeah, I think they had 5 fights in their regular season games.
There's a lot of bad blood in the Pacific. I guess people don't really know, but yeah.
Okay, and unfortunately for a lot of analysts, I guess, the last game was a few days before the trade deadline, and both teams obviously had some big pickups. So that's what do you think we can take away from the regular season, if anything?
Well, yeah, that's the problem. The rosters have changed so much. I think you can just take away from the fact that the teams know each other really, really well, and they're probably not going to be able to surprise each other, even though their rosters weren't in the final shape until the trade deadline. I think that they're very, very, very familiar with their style of play and what their tendencies are, and Dave Tippett and Daryl Sutter, they will always get the most out of their players. So the regular season was very, very close. It all came down to one goal game, except one game where they won 2-0. So I think the biggest thing you can take away from the regular season is that this is probably going to be a very tight series.
Let's go ahead and talk about matchups. I was reading an article earlier today on Jewels from the Crown, posted by Robert P., and it looked like both teams kind of went strength on strength. The first units played against each other the most, second units against each other the most, lines rather. Do you expect that to continue?
Yes, I do. One of the key things that Robert highlighted is the fact that when they acquired Vermette, they could bump Lankow down, and that's going to create a lot of pressure. So it's going to be an interesting battle with Stoll on the bottom six versus Lankow. I expect that to continue, yeah.
Well, to jump in a little bit, in the Phoenix-Nashville series, that Phoenix's second line with Vermette, Doan, and Mikhail Bodker, that was their best line by far in terms of generating chances. So part of the reason for that was because they got to take advantage of Nashville's second defense pairing, which really wasn't that good. So I would be on the lookout for them in this series because Denise, I think they're going to match them up. I think they're going to match a power versus power with Hanzel and Kopitar. So it'll be interesting to see how Vermette does against the Richards line.
So in terms of possession, the Kings have been dominant as they were for the second half of the season. And Phoenix, actually, I was quite surprised by this. They were pretty bad they've been bad in both series. I think we were all expecting them to be dominated in shots by Chicago, but they actually were actually Corey, they were outchanced against Nashville, right?
Yes, 74-67 at even strength.
So they were outchanced at even strength, and their score close, Fenwick, was down around 42% in that series. So that seems like a big area where the Kings could Kings look to have an edge. What are the other areas where you think the Kings might have an advantage?
I think maybe Voinov and Martinez might start scoring some more. Practically every Kings player has at least one goal in the playoffs, but I think a lot of people are expecting Yandel and Ekman-Larsson to be able to produce a lot on offense. But I think if Martinez and Voinov can jump up in there a little bit more, that could be a big difference.
Just to kind of jump in here, I know Phoenix has historically had a really bad power play, and the Kings' first unit consists of Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, Kopitar, Drew Doughty, and Martinez, I believe. And I suppose a question out of that would be, how do you think Martinez feels playing with four all-world players on the first power play unit?
Well, I feel he should think that he's earned it. He really has. You'll hear players like Brown talk about what they appreciate, what he brings to the table. He's able to get a really fast, accurate wrist shot just through to the net, rather than winding up for a big, long bomb of a slap shot, and like Johnson and Doughty often did. So I think he's really earned it. He's really made the most of his opportunity. I hope that he doesn't feel intimidated. I think he should feel proud.
No, I'm sure he doesn't. It's a great first unit, but that's just kind of something I noticed. Like, you've got four, you know, perennial Olympians, and then Martinez is out there.
Yeah, well, then the flip side of that is that all those perennial Olympians need to be a lot better.
No, definitely true. Definitely true.
their power play has been pathetic. They don't get off enough shots. They didn't get off enough shots in the regular season. I think they ranked 25th in shots with the man advantage. It was terrible, and it's continued in the postseason. They're just not getting enough quality shots off. Now, granted, Vancouver and St. Louis, they have good penalty killers, but it needs to be a lot better.
Yeah, plus the Vancouver, they have Luongo and, you know, Elliott there, so those aren't exactly pushover goalies. And I mean, Smith's, you know, in the same breath, but Phoenix's power play is really, really bad. So, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, like, if they're going to have an advantage against anyone, it's definitely going to be Phoenix.
Well, here's a fun fact about Phoenix's power play. In the Nashville series, they generated the same amount of power play chances as they did shorthanded. That was only four. That's all they got off in the five games.
Wow.
Oof.
And yet they still won five games. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, Smith, he's having a playoff run. So are there any areas where you think Phoenix actually has an edge? Or what are the areas you're most worried about, maybe?
I'm most worried about the goaltending, like you mentioned. Dave Tippett had a prior relationship with Mike Smith. He knew them from his time in Dallas, and he saw the potential there. And he thought he would be a really good fit with Sean Burke, the goalie coach. And they've set him up for success. He gets to play for a nice defensive-oriented team. But I think they should get a lot of credit for recognizing his potential and setting him up to become the confident goalie that he is right now. Right now he's playing very, very confident, and he's a gigantic tree person, so he blocks the net pretty easily anyway, even if he can't see the shot. So I wouldn't say that he's playing better than Quick right now. I think they're both playing amazing, but that's the thing. That's the concern that I have, that the Kings are going to be able to generate a lot of shots and chances, but they still have to get through the goalie. So that's my concern.
Anybody else have any questions here?
Yeah, not really. Just maybe a comment that about Quick, and just, I don't really think we've talked enough about how well he's played the first two series. I mean, holding opponents to 5.1%, I mean, shot percentage is just outstanding. So, I mean, we talked a lot about why the Kings have breezed through the first two rounds, and I think even though they've held the majority of the possession, he's the reason that, you know, they've only lost once. It's pretty amazing. The playoff run he's having, you know, just kind of alongside Smith. They're both going to be really good, and definitely going to be a lot of low scoring games, I predict.
Yeah, Quick has been incredible. I really didn't see. I was hoping that he would take the next step in his development, you know, at age 26 and have a great season this year. But I really didn't expect him to break out in this way. His focus has been incredible, and every single Kings player will say that he's been their MVP. He's just amazing, and he's so flexible and athletic, and then you add that with a ton of insane focus and his ability to just peek around players and crouch down and see things and just make that, never give up on the puck. Just it's amazing. Quick's awesome.
Yeah, more or less. That save he made in the last game against St. Louis was out of control, where he just threw his arm out and just got the puck. There was no way I thought he was going to make that save. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like without him, when they weren't scoring those goals and, you know, the first quarter to half of the season, I mean, I'd shudder to think where they would be if he just, you know, didn't, like you say, take that next step and, you know, turn into a truly elite goaltender like he's done this year.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be an incredibly frustrating situation to be in, to know that if you weren't perfect, you were probably going to lose. And he survived it, and I made him better, apparently, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. He's something else.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen a team that's been able to dominate possession and has an elite goalie since basically the salary cap. It's tough to get both those. All right, so I guess let's go ahead and wrap things up. Let's go ahead and start with predictions. We'll start with you, Denise.
I hate playoff predictions, but I was recently asked to give one for Five for Howling, and I said Kings and six, so I'll stick with that.
Kings and six. All right, Chase?
I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Kings in five games.
Five. Okay. Corey?
Well, Mike Smith has made me look like a fool for two times already in the playoffs, but I don't think it's going to be a third time, so I'm going to say the Kings take it in six.
Kings and six. Brent?
I'm going with the Mike Smith fooling theory. I'm going to say Kings in seven. I don't think the Coyotes have what it takes to win this series, but I think Smith will play really well, and I think that the Coyotes will put up a better fight than they did against the last two teams. I think they'll be a better possession team.
Yeah, I'm going to go Kings in five. I think it's going to be tough to find non-Phoenix writers or bloggers predicting Phoenix. I just think it's a terrible matchup for them. But okay, so we will leave it there. Thanks a lot. We had Denise, also known as Nisi from Jules from the Crown, on. You can find her on Twitter at NisiJFTC. That's NisyJFTC. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited about NHL numbers.
So are we.
As are we, yeah.
All right, that was great. Once again, we'd like to thank Denise Nisi from Jules from the Crown. Her Twitter handle, once again, is at NisiJFTC. And now we are going to turn to the Eastern Conference. And unfortunately, due to scheduling, we're going to have to split this up a bit. But we're going to go ahead and talk to our own Brent. He is a Devils expert for the Devils side. And then coming up in a bit, we're going to have George A's on, who will give us the Rangers angle. So welcome, Brent.
Hey, how's it going? I'm excited to watch this series instead of talking about it.
Well, we will start with the talking about it. What were your overall thoughts on the Flyers series?
Well, I was here 2 weeks ago predicting that the Flyers would win in five, and it turns out they lost in five, and it wasn't just because of Brizgalov. I actually thought Brizgalov played pretty well. It was because the Devils just put on a relentless forecheck throughout the whole series, and also did a great job handling the Flyers in their own zone. And five games was about how long that series should have gone. The Devils significantly outplayed the Flyers in three of the games, and they only got outplayed in one, and the other one was pretty much even, though I think the edge kind of went to New Jersey there too. So I was surprised. I didn't think the Devils had that in them. I didn't know if Brodeur had it in them, but they were given an opportunity by the Flyers, and they really took advantage, and now they're going to play the Rangers here in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, the big story there I really thought was the forecheck. The Devils just completely dominated the Flyers. They had no answer. They kept turning the puck over. What do you think? Do you think they changed anything? Why do you think the Devils really got that going so well?
I don't think much changed from the regular season. The Devils have added better players as the season has gone on, and they've changed the way their lines are set, and I think that's really helped out. You know, they have great forecheckers on every line now. They have Parise on the top line, Alexei Ponikarovsky, who was a great midseason addition, on the second line, and Dynas Dubas on the third line. And these guys, as the first, if they are the first man, they're very good at, even if they don't get the puck, they're able to force the defenseman from the other team to make a not so great play. And I think that's big on the forecheck. I think we're going to see it in this series. When you watch the forecheck, you see that even if the first guy doesn't get the puck, if he causes the player with the puck to make a slight mistake, you know, maybe the pass goes down for an icing, maybe, you know, the breakout just doesn't work the way that the team drew it up. And that's, I think, big to defensive success, and also can create offensive opportunities when the puck goes seriously awry and, you know, the Devils can get an odd-man rush or come into the zone or the offensive zone with speed as a result of turnovers forced by the forecheck.
So you've seen the Rangers, and specifically against the Devils, a decent amount this year. How do you think they will deal with that aggressive forecheck?
Well, you know, I thought in the past that was chronically a problem with the Rangers. They didn't deal well with teams that forecheck well. I think Ryan McDonagh is really having a tremendous playoff, and I think he's going to be the key to breaking the Devils' forecheck. He has to be smart with the puck. He has to be able to break it out well. Also, Michael Delzato is kind of relied on to move the puck out of the zone as well, and he's a very young defenseman. He's had problems both in his rookie year and earlier this year with making mistakes, and I think he's improved, but I don't know if he's improved enough. I think the Devils will be able to take advantage of some of the mistakes he's going to make. He tends to be a high-risk player with the puck, and I think the Devils sufficiently exploited Dmitry Kulikov of the Panthers, who's a similarly high-risk player. I think Delzato might be forced into some trouble, into some poor plays here.
And then another standout for the Devils in the second round especially, but really all playoffs, he's been fine, was Martin Brodeur. He was not that great in the regular season, so it really seems like he's stepped his game up. Does that surprise you at all?
Yes. I've gotten kind of used to the idea that, okay, the Devils are going to have to play really well, and Brodeur is going to have to just not screw up horribly. You know, the last three times the Devils were in the playoffs, they lost in the first round. And while I do not put all of the blame on Brodeur, certainly, I think he has not played particularly well in two of the last three playoff series. And even in the one where he did play well, the Carolina series, which went seven games, he played a phenomenal game. He was not very good in that game seven, and he wasn't the reason they lost, but he didn't perform up to the level of a supposed Hall of Fame legendary goaltender. This year also, he started off really poorly, and it looked like he might his play alone might cost the Devils a playoff berth, because he was just you know, letting in shots from the outside. He wasn't his positioning was off. He was losing his net. It was a very up and down regular season until about the All-Star break, when he finally began to put it together. He got some new pads apparently. This has seemingly helped him out a lot, and I thought he struggled a bit in the Florida series. A lot of people didn't really notice that because nobody was watching that series. But especially in Game 3, he had some trouble with some outside shots getting through him, and he was pulled in a tie game, which I don't think has ever happened to him. But he really responded after that, and he hasn't really had what I consider a poor game since then. He's let in some goals that I think are stoppable, but I don't think he's let in anything that has broken the Devils, you know, really cost them a game. So I'm kind of optimistic about him for this series. I think the one thing that he has done really well, which he hasn't been able to do in years past, I think in part because of the Devils' defense, is that he's been able to use his puck handling skill. Now, I think the media make too much of this, you know, how great it is that he can get the puck out. When you dump the puck
Pierre
in...
Pierre McGuire wouldn't shut up about it.
Right. When you dump the puck in, you're already... It's already tough to get it back. Like, we've seen that with some of the work that... Eric T has done over at Broad Street Hockey, for instance, that dumping the puck in is usually the worst choice when it comes to puck management in the neutral zone. But on the other hand, Brodeur and his defensemen have done a terrific job of playing off one another, of knowing where each other are going to be, and moving the puck out of the zone very quickly. And I think that was a not significant part, but a decent part of why they were so successful against the Flyers. The Flyers were just never really able to establish a forecheck. And part of it was because Brodeur was so good at handling the puck. So I'm hoping that will continue. I'm hoping we're not going to see, because of the Rangers' speed, people like Hagelin and Kreider might be able to force him into making plays he doesn't want to make, and we could see some goals as a result. So I'm hoping he's able to hold up and keep his phenomenal puck handling play, as well as his passable to very good goaltending in the series ahead.
One of the benefits of the series ending in five games with the Flyers is the Devils will get, or they got some extra time off, especially with the Rangers cap series going seven and being played just last night. So what do you think that'll play a role in the series?
I think so. I wish we had more of an examination of this, but it really seems to me the Rangers have played 14 games, which is, of course, obviously the most you can possibly play. And I've seen this stat a lot of places in the mainstream media, NHL.com, other. I think James Myrtle had it as well. Teams that have played 14 games in the first two rounds of the playoffs and obviously advanced to the next round are 0-7. And so I wonder if the Rangers can keep this going. They keep they're grinding out one goal games, very close games, you know, and. I think it's difficult on their defense. They only play five defensemen, really. Stu Bickel barely sees any ice time at all. And really, the Rangers have played more, like, their defensemen have had more time on the ice than pretty much anyone in any recent playoff memory, because in part they've played a few overtime games, including a very long one. And I think the fatigue will be a factor. I know that Rangers fans don't seem to think so, but I think it's difficult to just keep plowing ahead in these series without a significant break. And I think the Devils, on the Devils side, some of their players who've been more banged up, I think Kovalchuk, I think he's as good as he's going to be. I don't think he's going to heal. But players like Volchenkov and Clarkson, who have been supposedly battling through things, I think that'll help them. Marek Zielicki was hurt after game five of the Flyers series. He says he's okay. So I think health-wise, the Devils will get somewhat of a break. I am really surprised that the Rangers have not experienced any significant injuries on their defense, given how many shots they block and how much time they're just out there. But I think that could be a big factor as well. If anyone is injured for the Rangers, they do not have very much defensive depth, and I think they would struggle a great deal if they were down to four guys that they really trust.
Yeah, especially against that forecheck we were talking about. So let's go ahead and turn to matchups. How do you think the Rangers bring in an interesting situation? They really seem to have, for the most part, one line. They're not a super deep team as far as the scoring goes. How do you see the Devils trying to match up with the Richards line?
I think the Devils did not really match up against anyone in the Flyers series. They were content to basically roll three forward lines. They didn't really match power on power that much. They didn't really match a checking line. And defensemen also, they tended to get, I mean, obviously the third pairing got less time and tended to get it against the bottom six forwards of the opposing team. But I think maybe in this series, the Devils might go with a different strategy. I think they might try, at least at the in the home games, to match the Parisi-Eliash-Clarkson line against the Richards line. Parisi and Eliash together on the same line is a possession nightmare for the other team. And the Flyers really had no answer for that line. And I don't really think the Rangers, even though Girardi and McDonough are much better than the defensemen that the Flyers were using, I don't think they're going to have an answer for that line either. So I think at least Peter DeBoer has not shown himself to be a coach who's overly concerned with matchups on the road. He's not going to, you know, make a bunch of line changes during play. He's confident in the players he puts out there to be able to do their jobs. So I don't think we'll see a strict matchup, but I, you know, DeBoer has thrown in some monkey wrenches in the playoffs so far, and you know, it could very well happen again in this series.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and wrap things up there? Why don't you give us your thoughts and prediction?
My prediction I'll give you first is hesitantly Devils in six. I think the Devils have an edge both on special teams. I think their power play is much better than the Rangers' power play, and I think their penalty kill is better than the Rangers' penalty kill. I think that 5-on-5, the Devils are better than the Rangers. I obviously cede the goaltending edge to the Rangers. But if the Devils can put on a healthy forecheck like they did in the Flyers series, even though Lundqvist is a phenomenal goaltender, probably the best goalie in the world. I don't know if he can stand up to what the Devils are about to throw at him. I think they're a much better team than the Capitals are in terms of getting pressure. And while the Senators were also excellent at generating pressure, their problem was they took a bunch of silly penalties, and that really hurt them. The Devils showed themselves in the Flyers series that they weren't going to be taking any dumb penalties. They really cut down on taking penalties after the Florida series. And so I think that ultimately it's going to come down to the fact that the Devils are just a better the 18 skaters on the Devils are just better than the Rangers players.
Okay, so you are going to say Devils in six.
I am. I'm hoping.
All right. Now, through the magic of editing, we'll bring in George Ayes from Blue Shirt Banter. You can find him on Twitter at RangerSmurf. He's also going to be joining us soon on NHL Numbers, so we're all excited about that. Welcome, George.
Thanks for having me.
What are your overall thoughts on, actually, I guess both series, since we haven't talked to you since before the first round?
Ottawa series went as we expected. They gave the Rangers fits all day long and damn near knocked them out. And Cap series was a little harder than I expected. I thought they would get that one done in six games, but they didn't show up in game six, but they got their job done.
Got the job done last night. Okay, so with both those series going seven games, are you worried at all about fatigue, injuries, things like that, with especially the Devils getting a little bit of a layoff there?
Not especially. I've been saying it's not like, you know, the way Tortorella's been using his lines, which is relying on the top nine and relying on the top four, is basically the way he coaches all season. Yes, there are games where Mike Rupp might get 8 minutes, but this is the way they've been doing it all season long. Does it catch up with them? Maybe it does, but I feel they're pretty well conditioned to do this.
Okay, and another big story for the whole playoffs overall, really, because both teams had it going in that series, was the shot-blocking approach, really, by both teams, but especially the Rangers going back to both series. What are your thoughts there? Do you like what you see? And I guess it's not really any different than the regular season.
Same basic thing. That's what they're going to do. They're going to collapse. They're going to block shots. They're going to sacrifice the body. They're going to get hurt doing so. And, you know, that's the approach they're going to take. They actually, the Capitals were a little more, you know, they were blocking more shots than the Rangers were in this case, because the Rangers actually controlled the puck.
And so you obviously expect more of the same.
Expect more against the Devils. They're going to do the same thing against the Devils. They're going to try to frustrate them and make them shoot into shin pads over and over again, and hopefully get them to just start firing weak shots from the outside.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting last night. There was one shift that was about 2 minutes the Caps had in second, where it honestly to me looked like a 5-on-3 power play, not even a normal power play, because the Rangers, their wingers just completely collapsed. They had all five guys below the dots at some point, and the Caps were just passing back and forth, basically their demon, but they couldn't actually get any openings.
Yeah, it was just Green and Hamrelick back and forth over and over again. Fake shot, pass back to the other D-man. Fake shot, pass back to the other D-man, and they couldn't really get anything through. But, you know, they got a couple, but, yeah, it was an interesting shift.
So on the Devils' side, they have been more aggressive. The big story from them the last round especially, was their forecheck. How do you see the Rangers defenseman dealing with that very aggressive forecheck?
I think they're going to have a bit of an easier time than the Flyers' D. I think, you know, the Rangers' D is better than the Flyers' defense. It really is. I mean, the Flyers may be a bit deeper on the third pair, you know, because who isn't better than Stubickel right now? But McDonough and Girardi are, you know, they'll all be used to what the Devils are doing, and I think they're going to frustrate them a little bit.
So then another area I can see the Rangers struggling, they have been for most of the season from what I can tell, and that was the power play. What do you think is wrong with it, and do you think anything's going to change there?
Nothing's going to change. If it didn't change, whatever we are now, 96 games into the season, it's not going to change. You know, it's not going to change now. It maybe if Zuccarello gets ready by game five or something and they can bring him in to do something, but it's basically they just make slow decisions on the power play, and it comes from Stepan, it comes from Delzato. You know, they're very methodical, and that's not going to work against an aggressive penalty kill like the Devils have.
I guess from the first couple series overall, could you
give us maybe a player who you thought played particularly well for the Rangers and one you'd like to see improve.
Played well, I guess, you know, you have to start with Brad Richards, who basically, you know, was, you know, the quote-unquote clutch player that they signed. You know, scored, you know, a goal very quickly in Game 7 to give them the lead. Was scoring timely goals, set up Gabrick in the triple overtime. He's just played extremely well, which is actually a bit surprising to me. Maybe it shouldn't be. But he had a, you know, slower season this year, and but he's picked it up in the playoffs. Player that needs to be better, I think, is Derek Stepan. I think he's just had a very weak playoff overall so far. He's been non-factor except for maybe one or two games where he was paired with Kreider and Callahan. But for the most part, he hasn't really done much, and I think he needs to have a big series. He had a decent year against the Devils. He actually led all Rangers in scoring chances against the Devils this year, so I'm hoping this series will get him going, because if it does, it gives them a little deeper offense and should make the Rangers' time against the Devils a little easier.
Speaking of the Rangers and the Devils, obviously a lot of people are going to talk about the 94 series, but these teams obviously are pretty familiar with each other in the regular season, and they had that game that started out with, I guess, five fights or four fights.
Whatever, right?
Only three.
Three, okay. It was sort of absurd, and the benches were getting into it. Do you think there'll be a lot of carry over there? How do you see, I guess, the hostility going?
I think it's going to be a much more disciplined series than some of the, you know, debauchery that was going on during the regular season. You know, the Devils, from what I'm gathering, are not dressing Bolton and Jansen anymore, so that will really calm things down to begin with. I think it's, you know, there'll be some chippiness as it goes on because the teams generally don't like each other. But I don't think you're going to see the melees to start games that you did during the season.
Yeah, obviously the stakes are a lot higher. That can definitely change things. So on the matchup side, you mentioned depth with Stepan. The Devils really have two very strong lines in the Kovalchuk line and the Parise Eliash line. How do you think the Rangers are going to try to match their forwards to those guys first? Then we'll move on to the defensemen.
They're going
to
put Boyle on Kovalchuk. I would guess he's the more dangerous of the two, so I think they'll concentrate with Boyle's line on Kovalchuk, and then they'll give with Dubinsky out of the series, it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with Parise, if they'll let Richards and Hagelin and Gabrick deal with them, or if they'll do something else, you know, move Callahan away from Boyle and build, you know, like Anisimov and Callahan together or something to help counteract the second line. It'll be interesting to see. I don't completely have a gauge without Dubinsky in the series.
Okay, and then what about the defensemen? Like you said, the Rangers basically run kind of just two pairings. How do you see them lining up as far as which of the Devils they're going to face?
McDonough and Girardi will definitely get Kovalchuk. McDonough's done a decent job on Kovalchuk this year, even though Kovalchuk is really impossible to stop to a certain degree. And then you'll get Stalin, Delzato on Parise's line, and then Strowman, you know, will fill in here or there. He'll play offensive situations. You know, he'll play the power play a little bit and generally chip in later as they go when he starts rotating five defensemen, starting, you know, roughly after five shifts.
Okay, and then Matt, you were discussing the matchups earlier. Did you have any follow-ups to that?
Yeah, one thing, I find it, one thing that kind of struck me is, given Stepan, that he's had a pretty tough playoffs, I mean, it really limits, in my mind, basically what New York can do, because I mean, depth is an issue if he's not contributing, obviously. And outside of Boyle, they really don't have that, you know, iconic shutdown center. And it seems to me that if they do decide to play Gabrick and Richards against either Parise or Kovalchuk, I think that'll be extremely tough from a territorial standpoint, because, you know, especially if they're lined up against Parise, because, you know, the Parise-Eliash line has just been crushing in terms of Corsi. So I guess my question to you is, do you think they could potentially maybe split up Richards and Gabrick and maybe pair Richards with Callahan as more of a shutdown line, like a second shutdown line, and then do something like put Stepan with Gabrick and Hagelin and give them basically just every offensive zone start. Because if sort of this progression holds where New York is, you know, losing the possession battle and New Jersey is winning, it seems like, you know, they're almost going to have to, a second center is going to have to step up. And I was just wondering who you think that'll be.
I think it would be Anisimov. If they need a second line, they'll put Anisimov and Callahan together, and I don't know who they might even drop Hagelin down with them. You know, put Hagelin, Anisimov, and Callahan together and move Kreider up with Richards and Gabrick and give them all the offensive zone starts. And, because Anisimov can handle, you know, he's, to a certain degree, he's their best two-way center. He's not as good defensively as Boyle, not as good offensively as Stepan, but his combined game is probably the best of, you know, of anybody they have on the roster. So I think he needs to have a big series.
And just additionally, how confident are you in that as a matchup? Because it seems like, you know, maybe if they can draw even, maybe they'll be able to draw even with, say, the Parise line or the Kovalchuk line. But if I were a Rangers fan, I think my biggest concern would be the damage that other top line that New Jersey has would do at even strength.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern, and it's going to come up again, but not having Dubinsky in the series is going to make, you know, it makes it a little tougher, too. I think Dubinsky and Anisimov and Callahan together could certainly work as a second shutdown line behind Fedotenko, Boyle, and, you know, Prost or whoever else he wants to throw on that line. You know, Hagelin is a bit of a possession monster himself. So, you know, that's what I said. Hagelin and Anisimov and Callahan, you might see Anisimov, Boyle, and Callahan together, and then Fedotenko with, he's going to interchange the lines a lot trying to counter the two top lines of the Devils. They do present matchup issues. I expect the Rangers to lose the territorial battle to a certain degree. You're just hoping that Lundqvist can make up for what they do lose.
Okay, are there any of those matchups you think will tilt in the Rangers' favor? As far as the top end?
I think when Hagelin, Richards, and Gabrick, if they are together, when they get going, they can create a lot of issues. I think they would create more issues for the Kovalchuk line. I think they're a bit weaker defensively than Parise's line would be. So I think they could potentially win that matchup. But, you know, overall, 5-on-5 is going to be a bit of a struggle.
Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, George, I saw you mention on Twitter that only three Rangers had a shooting percentage above 8% in the playoffs. I think it was Anisimov, Boyle, and Staal might have been the other one. So the Rangers have been having some poor shooting luck in the playoffs. Who do you see like as a potential to break out, like as far as like luck goes?
Well, I said behind that, as scary as it might be with the amount of points Richards has put up already, but Richards is below 5% at even strength. So, I mean, Gabrick was only around 6.5. If they start getting pucks to go even more than they are already, I mean, that could really turn the series around. And just in general, I mean, it's the playoffs and it's a singular matchup. So, you know, to a certain degree, it's going to depend on Brodeur, too. If Brodeur has a good series, then, you know, there's not a lot you're going to be able to do about turning that puck luck around. You know, they ran into Anderson, who, you know, I mentioned in the original podcast, Anderson can get hot, and he somewhat did during the Rangers series. And Holtby was mostly outstanding throughout the playoffs. Brodeur's had an, you know, he's been revitalized in these playoffs somehow. You know, because he kind of looked done in November and December. So his play is going to dictate a lot of, you know, their puck luck.
I noticed that I looked at Brodeur and Lundqvist's even strength save percentages, and they're both around the same marks. I think they're like 940 or around that area. And the difference is that Brodeur is getting torched on the PK, where Lundqvist has been pretty good there.
Yeah, which is interesting because it was almost the reverse for Brodeur during the regular season. He was actually outstanding on the penalty kill, but was, you know, weaker. Not Brizgalov weak, but weaker during the regular season at even strength, and now he seems to have reversed it. I don't know if it's something they changed, you know, that, you know, the Devils changed internally, you know, process-wise, or, you know, if it's just he's seeing the puck better. But, yeah, he's played very well at even strength, and it's a concern because if he wins the even strength goalie battle on top of them going to win, Devils winning possession, then the Devils should win the series.
Yeah, that's something we mentioned earlier with Brent. He's only given up 13 even strength goals during the playoffs, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah, George, I didn't know if you had any tips or tricks for the listeners on how to stay awake during a Rangers-Devils playoff series.
It can't be that bad. If you got through the Capital series, you'd be all right. It's Hunter hockey that's really doing the damage, I think. I mean, not that the Rangers play a tremendous, you know, high-octane style, but they weren't near, you know, they don't grind down play nearly as bad as the Capitals were, you know, we're doing.
Do you find it odd at all that the Rangers are the boring team in a Rangers-Devil series?
It's a little weird. It's definitely a little weird that the, you know, but it's not, you know, it's the one thing to clarify. I mean, the Rangers are not a trap team. They don't play a trapping style. They, you know, they're not in the neutral zone clogging things up.
I thought they did a pretty good job of preventing the Caps from doing anything in the neutral zone the third period last night, because they just shut them down completely.
Well, their forecheck was in gear last night. They spent a lot of time, you know, it seems like the Caps were just a step slow all night, and whether or not that's, you know, was Caps fatigue or the Rangers just stepped up their game enough to keep it, but they seemed to be keeping them pinned a lot of the third period, and even when the Caps did get down the ice, you know, they were getting plays, like you said, they were getting plays broken up in the neutral zone, or they were forcing dump-ins, and they were doing a good job of recovering pucks last night.
But yeah, George, you've mentioned a few times that speed is a big problem with the Rangers. Like, they have a big problem, like, playing against guys who can skate well. Do you see this being an issue against the Devils at all?
I don't think it would be as much as it is. It's funny, because the Devils fans that I've seen in Lou We Trust are, you know, kind of saying the same thing right now, that they're not, you know, the reason they struggled against Florida, they're saying it's because of Florida's speed. So if they can't deal with speed and the Rangers can't deal with speed, I don't think speed will be an issue for either team. You know, the Rangers have some guys down, and Kreider helps, because Kreider is lightning fast. Hagelin obviously helps. Gabrick is no slowpoke himself. So they're getting faster, and McDonough, you know, the issue the Rangers have with speed is on the back end. McDonough's really the only phenomenal skater back there. Stahl is very good, but Girardi and Delzato can be interesting at times. You know, Girardi especially, while he's a very good defensive defenseman, he's not the quickest guy in the world. And, you know, I think that's why they had a lot of trouble with Kovalchuk during the year, because Kovalchuk was pretty fast himself, and, you know, they really didn't stop him at all. You know, every game, it seems, you were just saying Kovalchuk took, you know, 3, 4, 5 scoring chances, you know, was setting up others. He actually ended up with 30 during the course of this season matchup.
Wow.
19 chances himself plus 11 setups.
Just another quick question. Has Mark Stahl's play improved at all in the playoffs?
Stahl looks like all-star Stahl. I mean, especially against the Caps. He was a little... Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had his moments against Ottawa, but against the Capitals, he looked every bit the player that he was 2 years ago, where he's just, you know, he's going to stop you, not only stop you from, you know, he'll block your shots or two, but he's very good at preventing passes. That'll, you know, he just completely negated players at times. Yeah, and he's, you know, much less hesitant now. And I think it showed in the way, you know, Tortorella deploys his ice time now. I mean, Stahl's back up to 27, 28 minutes. You know, in the overtime, he actually led all the Rangers in even strength time. You know, he beat McDonough by 14 seconds. You know, he played close to 50 minutes that game, you know, so he's got the coach's trust again, and he's playing exceptionally well.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic in Game 7.
The offense hasn't come around yet. I mean, it's been good. He's got as many points in the playoffs as he did all season, so it's getting there. I mean, that's the part of the game I don't think has completely come back, but defensively, he's every bit the player he was.
Anybody else?
Yeah. One thing we talked with Brent about earlier, and one thing that gave the Flyers fits was the Devils' really aggressive forecheck. How do you see the Rangers responding to this, and do you think that'll bring up any issues for them in this series?
I didn't get to see a lot of the Flyers' Devils series, so I don't know exactly what they changed about their forecheck, but the Rangers did a decent job all season against the Devils at controlling, you know, slowing them down and not letting them get out into space. Because of the, you know, they've already played 14 playoff games and the top four logged a lot of minutes, I can see it becoming an issue if they go full bore, you know, if the Devils roll four lines consistently and that forecheck can really get in and, you know, play physically against, you know, Girardi and McDonough and Staal and Delzato. I could see it presenting an issue, you know, towards the end of the series, but I don't think it, you know, I think early on they'll be okay with it. And, you know, if they're not, Tortorella will make adjustments. You know, I mean, he's, you know, he gets a lot of flack from Rangers fans still, but he's a very good tactical coach.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the Flyers' main problems, really. Laviolette really just didn't adjust to it at all. And after game one, it was just turnover after turnover and for the Flyers trying to break the puck out of their own zone. In fact, I think Andreas Lilje just turned the puck over again. But, I mean, yeah, that really gave the Flyers fits. But if Tortorella can adjust to it, that's definitely something that would benefit the Rangers in that scenario. But I do think DeBoer is the type of coach, we were also talking about this earlier, who will roll four lines and doesn't really seem to care about matchups quite as much. He just, I mean, he'll just throw out there whatever line he thinks can handle whoever's on the ice at that particular moment. So I think that will be the Devils' strategy, and I'm interested to see how the Rangers respond to it, just because it just was completely the Flyers' undoing in some of those games where they got, you know, outchanced 4-1.
Yeah, I think the Flyers ran into a little bit of a problem because of the way the Penguin series was played.
Yeah, that's also a good point.
You know, they were playing just, you know, first to 10 wins in that series. And I think, you know, playing a team that's more disciplined defensively, you know, and just as aggressive offensively, you know, gave the Flyers fits. Going to this series, I think that's going to be something interesting to watch with the Devils, because they haven't exactly played, you know, the elite goaltenders in the league themselves. You know, they faced Scott Clemenson and Jose Three or More and, you know, Brizgalov.
Brizaster.
Yeah, you know, so... Yeah, you know they're coming off a series where they faced an 880 goaltender, and now they're going to run into Lundqvist. Now, you know, they're familiar with Lundqvist, obviously, but I think it might create issues, especially if game one, you know, their offense doesn't go the way they want it to. You know, DeBoer might make some changes that are actually detrimental rather than sticking to his game plan.
Okay, I guess we should just about wrap things up here. Let's go ahead and go with predictions. George, what is your prediction for the series?
I have to say Rangers in seven. I'm not all that convinced it's going to be Rangers in seven. I think the Devils are playing good hockey right now, and Lundqvist is going to have to be even better than he's been. I mean, he's been good, but he hasn't been fantastic all the time. You know, he's let in a couple softies this play, you know, against the Caps and against Ottawa. But I think it's going to be, you know, the quest for 16 and 12 will continue.
Okay. Corey, what's your prediction?
I'm going to go with the Rangers in six games. I think goaltending is going to be a big factor because, like George said, the Devils have been facing goalies like Theodore and Brizgalov, and Lundqvist is a completely different animal from them, so I think that's going to be a big factor, and I think the Rangers are going to take it in six.
Rangers in six. Matt?
I'm going to agree with Brent and say New Jersey in six. I think... just the 5-on-5 play is going to be an advantage for New Jersey that I don't think New York will be able to overcome, even with the advantage they have in that.
Okay, Chase?
It really pains me to do this, but I'm going to pick the Devils in six games. I'm not really convinced with how the Rangers have been playing. I don't think they're all that great, and I just think New Jersey will take advantage of that and win in six games.
Yeah, with apologies to George, I will also take the Devils in six. I think fatigue will start to become a factor, and I also think that that Devils forecheck is going to, especially get on some tired defensemen, it's going to be tough. So I will take the Devils in six. And I guess that just about wraps it up. We'd like to thank George Hayes from Blue Shirt Banter and NHL Numbers for joining us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Once again, we'd like to thank our guests, Nisi from Jules from the Crown and George Hayes from Blue Shirt Banter. For Chase, Brent, Matt, and Corey, I'm Jared. Thanks for listening.